You clock out. We clock in. Welcome to the Torn by Sports Lunch Break.
Welcome to my second edition of the Torn by Sports Lunch Break podcast. It's January 29th, so if you happen to listen to this either tomorrow or Monday, just mind you, the information may or may not be time sensitive. Today, my guest is Adam Mangum, and he is a marketer, writer, and podcast host of BYU Rise and Shout. That's on Twitter at BYU underscore Rise Shout. Adam, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
Not too bad. What part of Minnesota are you from? Not that I'd be able to. I got a couple of spots in mind. Just, can you draw me towards one?
Yeah, I am. We live just east of St. Paul.
Okay. And how long have you been over there?
We've lived here for 5 years. We were in Wisconsin 5 years before that, so we've been up in the frozen Midwest for a while.
Okay. And that all has to do with your day job, I take it.
That does have to do with my day job, unfortunately. No, it's actually a really nice place to live. I've lived in a lot of places in the country and traveled. Been to 49 states. I still need Alaska, but
wow.
It's a pretty cool place. I mean, this time of year is annoying because it's just been cold for so long, but it's not so bad. The summers are pretty cool.
I bet. So this is just another temporary stomping ground, huh?
I don't know. We've got kids now, so you never know. Maybe we'll stay put for a while.
Okay. By the looks of your Twitter photo, it looks like four of them. You got four kids?
Yes, four daughters.
Wow.
All girls all the time. Yeah.
Loaded.
I know the name of almost every My Little Pony and their backstory.
I might challenge you to that later.
Yeah, we could have a battle, a brony battle.
Well, great. Hey, I just wanted to lead off with some WCC West Coast Conference talk. I recently wrote something that people may or may not have agreed with, how I thought the WCC was down this year as opposed to years past in comparison. We got your obvious front runners at St. Mary's and Gonzaga at the top. Pepperdine, a surprise, they're sitting at 7-3 in the conference in third. And then the Cougs, just a half a game back of them. And anybody else that falls after that is just kind of, you know, like I consider it a cupcake, really. What are your thoughts on the WCC as a whole right now?
Zach, I agree with you. It's down. If you look at, say, like MacyRatings.com or Pomeroy or any of those kind of rating sites, you'll see that if you take an average of the WCC, they're down. That is partially due to that bottom third. I mean, once you hit Loyola, Marymount, I mean, Pacific and San Francisco are okay. But once you hit below them, it's pretty bad. And then the other part is, in the last few years at least, the top three have been fairly similar in quality to each other, and maybe Gonzaga a little heads and shoulders above the rest, but still, you know, top 60 teams. A lot of times you've had three in the top 60. You don't. You just have two. BYU certainly can't make claim to that this year, though that could change if they play better in the last few weeks. But I'm with you. The WCC is down a little bit this year. I think part of that's cyclical, and part of that's Gonzaga's not quite as good as they've been. But most of it's to do with that middle part of the conference just isn't as – they were never world beaters, but they were at least decent this year. I'm not even sure they're decent.
Yeah. You know, we talked before this interview started about Zach Hicken, who was my guest a couple days ago. And he thought that it wasn't out of the ordinary for the WCC to get two teams in the dance. I kind of see that kind of a long shot at this point. What are your thoughts? And, you know, I see St. Mary's sitting at 17-2, but I feel like that's kind of clouded with their overall schedule, the quality wins. You know, they haven't played anybody in the AP top 25. They're 15-0 at home. I believe that their first 13 or 14 games were all in the Bay Area, as Zach Hicken pointed out, and 2-2 on the road. So I'm fairly critical, you know, and also with the Zags, you know, blowing leads at home to teams that they really should have beat. You know, Arizona and UCLA, those are good Pac-12 teams, don't get me wrong, but teams that they had the lead on and couldn't close it out, which is, you know, fairly typical of past Mark Few teams. But what are your thoughts as far as automatic bids into the Big Dance, outside of who's going to win this conference?
Yeah, so I think St. Mary's is the big wild card, Zach, for me. I don't know how good they are. They, as you pointed out, they've played almost all of their games at home still. They have not played a lot of good teams. If they beat BYU and Gonzaga down the stretch and then are able to, you know, kind of and then win the, you know, not get to the championship game in the conference tournament, I think they're in. But if they lose to BYU and Gonzaga to finish the year and then they get beat, say, in the semifinals by somebody, I don't think they're in, because I think their out-of-conference schedule was so poor that the committee's going to kill them for that. I think Gonzaga will be helped by the fact that even though they're not as strong as they have been in years past, and their home record is a little disconcerting this year, and, you know, they've lost to BYU twice in a row in Spokane, which I'm sure has Zag fans annoyed. They still had a good out-of-conference schedule, and I think skill-wise, they have the most talent of anybody in the conference. So when I think they could go on a win streak and just kind of win out, and then a few weeks from now we're saying, why were we doubting Gonzaga? They have it in the bag. I think you're right, though. It could be, if St. Mary's falters, BYU certainly not even on the bubble anymore. They would have to go on quite a streak to get back into the bubble contention. I think it could very well be a one-bid league this year based on, you know, who wins the conference tournament. If Gonzaga goes on a run and then wins the conference tournament, I think it's a one-bid league. If St. Mary's stays good and maybe then loses in the conference championship to Gonzaga or BYU, then maybe it's a two-bid type of league. There's certainly not, like there has been in a couple seasons past, there's three teams are not coming out of the WCC this season.
Yeah, that we can agree on. More on BYU specifically. In years past, Zach Hicken, ESPN 960 out of Salt Lake, he kind of mentioned 24 as kind of that magic number. Maybe it was even 26. And with 10 games remaining on BYU's schedule, not counting the WCC conference tournament, what do you see the likelihood of them coming close to winning out? And then come tournament time, winning at least two games in that WCC conference tournament?
I don't feel great about it, Zach. I think they're a young team. You know, well, I guess they're kind of a strange team in that they're kind of top-loaded and then and bottom-loaded, some experienced players, and then you go down to almost no experience. I think that means they could get better. Players like Nick Emery, for example, I think could get better as the year progresses. Has shown signs of that, especially defensively. Seems to be getting better the last few games, more consistent on defense. But there's no evidence from the season to this point that they could win out. I think if they lost one, and it has to be to St. Mary's or Gonzaga, it can't be to anybody else. If they lose one more and then win two games in the tournament, I think they have an outside shot at making the tournament. Yeah. I think their best bet at this point is winning the conference tournament, just getting hot for 3 days in Vegas and hitting a bunch of threes. At this point is probably their best chance. But, you know, Coach Rose has pulled this out a couple of years in a row where at this point in the season, most of us thought they were not in. What he's lacking this time is any out-of-conference wins that turn out to be pretty spectacular. Right now, it's kind of Belmont or New Mexico is your best out-of-conference win, and that's maybe a top 100 team, maybe. That's not the landmark like he's had in the past.
Right. Yeah, looking at the remaining schedule, they got the toughies out of the way on the road in Gonzaga and St. Mary's. Now they would have to hold court in Provo to have a chance to sweep the season series in either one or both of them. But Adam, it's looking like they got 7 to 10 games at home, and over half of them are against that bottom tier cupcake type WCC squad. So my personal thoughts on it. I wouldn't put it out of the realm, but it sounds like they can win 8 or 9 of the next 10 and go on a little run in the conference tournament. You're giving them a shot.
Yeah, I'd give them a shot. I think the problem is they're going to drop a game to somebody. It could be Pepperdine this Saturday. We're recording on Friday. It could even be San Francisco on the road in a couple of weeks. I just think one of those games that you think, oh, they're going to win that one, they're going to drop, because quite frankly, that's just been their pattern the last few seasons in the WCC on the road, is losing to lesser teams, especially if the three ball is not falling.
Right. How well does Kyle Collinsworth have to play for BYU to win? When the three ball's not dropping and it's kind of Collinsworth or nothing. What's the mentality of the game plan there when that seems like that's their only option?
Well, I think the biggest problem for Collinsworth is last year he had another scorer who could create their own offense either off of screens or off the dribble in Tyler Hawes. Right now there isn't anybody consistently can do that. Occasionally Chase Fisher gets going if he has a defender who's maybe not as quick. And occasionally Nick Emery has shown some of that ability. But before it was kind of like if Collinsworth was having an off night, you had the all-time BYU leading scorer there to hit the shots. He doesn't have that now. I think he's got to be even better than he's been, which is kind of an unfair thing to ask of a guy that's already fills the stat line. I think the other part is somebody's going to have to hit big shots when he drives and gets double teamed in the clutch. Somebody's going to have to get out there and hit those shots, whether that's Emery. Fisher's probably not going to be left open, so it's probably Emery, Celius, or somebody else who's going to have to hit that shot. The other part is he needs help from the big men in rebounding, because one of the things that I think hurts BYU sometimes is he's the best rebounder on the team. So he ends up, your point guard sometimes is not getting the break going as fast as you'd like because he's down there, getting a rebound. But right now, outside of maybe Nate Austin and Kyle Davis, we don't have a lot of consistent rebounding from the bigs either. So he's going to have to be really, really good, which, like I said, he may be one of the top 7 or 8 guys to ever play at BYU. It's kind of unfair to ask him to, hey, can you be even a little bit better for another couple weeks?
Mm-hmm. What's he like in the locker room? Do you have any insight on that?
The reporters I've talked to say he's become a leader over time. That wasn't something that was like a natural thing for him. I think BYU has had a few guys lately who've been their best players. Tyler Hawes was this way, who was not a rah-rah, locker room type. But they say, the reporters that I've talked to and those close to the team that I've talked to say that he's kind of grown into that in the last year and a half, and especially this season. And you can even see it on the floor. He'll bark at guys a little bit if they're out of position. And that is something that 2 years ago, Kyle Collinsworth would have never done. There were a lot of older players on the team and he deferred. But, he knows this is his team and he's a senior. This is his last shot. He, of all the players, I will feel the worst for him if they don't make the NCAA tournament, because number one, it'll be the first time he's missed it. But more importantly, he deserves it as a player to get there. Unfortunately, the team surrounding him is not quite as good as some of the teams he's played on in the past.
Yeah. Do you think he plays in Europe after this?
Yeah. I think he's got an outside shot at the NBA, and I think Europe will fit his game really, really well if he decides to go that way. I think because of his size, some NBA teams will give him a look. I think I wouldn't be surprised if somebody took a second-round flyer on him. I do think his quickness as a defender will be a little bit – I mean, he's a good defender, but in the NBA – gosh, on the perimeter, if you're not fast, that's in today's NBA, you're going to be a liability. Europe, he's a great fit for European ball. I mean, with all the things that he can do, he was kind of almost built to play ball over there. He'll have a chance to play professionally for sure if he wants to take that course.
Yeah. So we got your boy Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers coming to town, Santa Clara, with Denver. And what are your thoughts on how that game goes? Who do you give the edge to? Have you seen the spread?
Yeah, I saw the spread. I'm probably taking Carolina even with the spread. I think, you know, I am a Patriots fan, which means most of the people listening to this hate my team and maybe me. But that's all right. Watching that Denver defense, they are quite good. And I think they will do a much better job at containing Cam Newton because they have some faster linebackers than the Cardinals did. So I think they'll do a better job containing him. I just don't believe against that Carolina defense. I mean, the Patriots defense, which is good, but not great, it really shut Peyton Manning down after about two drives. I don't think he's going to be able to put up enough points. The Broncos are going to be able to put up enough points. Unless the defense creates like three or four turnovers, then it's, you know, a totally different game. But if we just kind of play it straight up, I just think the Panthers kind of roll in this one, which will make for boring for us football fans. But for those that tune into the game for the commercials and ignore the football, it'll be just fine.
Yeah. Do you make as much out of what it seems like our national media is making out of Cam Newton's demeanor and just the way he goes about his business, especially you know, after he scores or a big first down? What are your thoughts on how he carried himself?
Yeah, see, I would not do that if I were him. That's just my personality. I'm not built that way. That being said, to me, it just feels like a bunch of old white guys, you know, complaining about, you know, they don't play it like they did. You know, Bart Starr wouldn't have been doing that. Bart Starr also didn't leap over grown men into the end zone. So, you know, Cam's got some, I don't know. I never had problems with Aaron Rodgers doing the belt thing, which unfortunately has now become like State Farm discount double check. But I never have any problems with that, with touchdowns and other things. I mean, I would just hand the ball and go back to the huddle. That's my personality. And I prefer players to do that. But in the end, if Cam Newton wants to kiss his arm or do whatever, do a little dance, knock yourself out. He's a great player. I don't think he's trying to disrespect his opponents or the game. I think he's a guy that really just likes to have fun when he plays. And we've got enough Tom Brady's, Peyton Manning's, and other guys that don't look like they have an ounce of fun when they're out on the football field. I think it's okay for occasionally to have a guy that celebrates. You know, like I think other commentators said this, if he's down 21 points and does it, I would find it to be a little annoying. But, you know, when you're rolling and you're diving into the end zone, go ahead, knock yourself out.
All right. Well, I'm going to actually first, let's hear a little bit about this new book coming out March of this year, Pete Crosser. Tell me a little bit of the details there, how you came up with the idea, kind of some insight on the plot, what to expect.
Yeah, sure. So my debut epic fantasy novel, Pete Crosser, is with the editor right now. I don't have an exact release date till I get the manuscript back from her, but it should be sometime in March. I crowdfunded it, so I got mainly friends and family, but a few others to help me with that, to pay for the editor and book design and a few other things. I've always been this way as a little kid. I'm always, if I'm sitting in a room, like, don't play this for my work colleagues, but if I get bored in a meeting, my mind usually goes to some story I'm making up out of who's in the room or what else is going on. This particular one, it was kind of a combination of a story I had told to my daughter to try to get her to go to sleep when she was in kindergarten, and a scene from one of the Lord of the Rings movies, and it kind of came into this, imagine a world where most of the continent's covered in high mountains and everybody's separated by these massive mountains, so they have to go through tunnels or fly over on giant birds. So that's kind of was the premise. And the plot's kind of your, you know, typical epic fantasy. There's a guy, and in my case, he's a married guy with a couple of kids, because maybe that's where I'm at instead of some 17-year-old. I don't do teenage love angst, so you won't find much of that in anything I write. But, you know, main character. Yeah. I can't. I didn't like that when I was 17. I certainly, when I'm almost 40, don't want to delve into that. But he gets separated from his family, and basically the entire point of the plot is he's trying to get back and get his life back to normal after it gets kind of ripped from him by getting involved with some rebels who are trying to use him to their advantage. So that's kind of where it is. If folks are interested, you can go to adamjmangum.com and find out about the book and anything else that I'm doing, as well as learn more about our BYU sports podcast, Rise and Shout podcast. So that's kind of the basics.
Perfect. Very cool. That's adamjmangum.com.
Correct. Correct.
Awesome. So let me get you out of here on this. Something that I hope grows into a tradition with these podcasts for me is a 30-second shot clock of questions.
All right.
I got my timer ready, and they're very short, to the point. You just you answer, and we move on, see how many we can get through. Sound like a plan?
All right, let's do it.
Okay. And 3, 2, 1. Collinsworth or Jimmer, one-on-one?
Jimmer.
Will Dave Rose be coach in 5 years?
No.
Who will win the WCC this year?
I think Gonzaga.
How many WCC teams go to the tourney?
One.
If the student body had a vote, would they say BYU is a football or basketball school?
Football.
Scenario, BYU down 3 with 15 seconds left. Give it to Fisher for a 3 or a quick 2-1 with Kyle?
Fisher for a 3.
Over or under, Collinsworth plays 2 seasons in the NBA.
I'm going to, my heart takes the over, but my brain takes the under.
Gordon Hayward will be a Jazz for life.
No. I don't know that there's anybody's a player for life anymore.
Good point. The Warriors repeat.
Oh, absolutely. I will say this. I know you're probably at the end of your question. I grew up as a huge NBA fan. I've kind of fizzled over the last few years. And I basically have it set my phone to tell me when the Golden State Warriors are going to be on national TV so I can watch them. If you're a basketball fan and you don't enjoy watching the Warriors, I don't know what to tell you, because, man, it is fun. Them right now and the Spurs in the West, I mean, those two teams are spectacularly good. But, yes, I think Golden State will repeat.
Wouldn't that just be a dynamite 7-game series?
Oh, fantastic. If everybody's healthy, that series should be epic and, quite frankly, would be kind of the de facto. It's kind of how I felt about the Panthers and the Cardinals last weekend. Like, I felt that those were the best two teams in the NFL. And I think that's, as of today, if they're both healthy, barring any major injuries, Golden State and San Antonio, they're the best two teams. And I don't think it's really that close. Any team with LeBron is still in it, but they're not deep like the Warriors and the Spurs are.
Yeah. Adam, I appreciate your time, man. Let's do it again.
Absolutely. Thanks, Zach.
This has been a Torn Life Sports production.